This lecture is supported by Muntons Malt, a division of Muntons PLC selling over 210,000 tonnes of malt annually to the world's brewing, distilling and food industries. Go to muntonsmalt.com.
The Brewers Lectures!
Alex Troncoso is co-founder and head brewer of Bristol's Lost and Grounded Brewers. Alex's brewing journey is more than 20 years in the making. He graduated as a chemical engineer in 1996 from the Colorado School of Mines. He subsequently completed a graduate degree in brewing as well as a master's in business. He played an integral role in the monumental expansion of Little Creatures in Fremantle, Australia, overseeing three production sites and also served as brewing director at Camden Town Brewery. He co-founded Lost and Grounded Brewers with partner Annie Clements, and in 12 short months, they have made their name with excellent beers. Please welcome Alex.
Yes, my name's Alex, or Alejandro for those that know me, a bit closer. So I was born in Guatemala, but my old man was Chilean and grew up in the US till I was 16 and then moved to Australia when I was 16. So. It's all a bit mixed up, but now we're in Bristol, so now we've got a bit of West Country as well going on. So I suppose everyone's wondering, what is he going to talk about? And I thought, it's amazing, isn't it? The economics of brewing. And everyone thinks, oh, I can't wait. Someone's going to speak about this. This is amazing. Over my time in the industry, I started full-time in brewing, I don't know, about 15 years ago or something, but I started home brewing in 1992. And just seeing so much change, and I thought, actually, if you're an economist, it'd be brilliant. And actually, I think it's Bart Watson, his name is. He's the economist for the Brewers Association in the U.S. He would have actually a brilliant job at the moment, if you're an economist, that is. Because actually, the way the brewing industry is going is actually economics playing out in front of your eyes, like year by year. So I sort of thought that the first thing that I love this quote is, like, I want to be different like everyone I want to be like. Because actually, in fact, there's so many breweries in the market now, and I always sort of call it the teenager complex. I want to be different like everyone else. It's like, well, when does different stop being different? You know, so when there's thousands of breweries and we're all making a similar range of products, when does that stop being different? You know, are we different because we started making pale lager? It's like, that's ridiculous because 99% of the beer in the world is pale lager, you know, but so are we different or not different? I'm not really sure, you know. But that's King Missile. If anyone's a music fan, you can look up some King Missile and have a listen to that. Just a bit of an overview of us at Lost and Grounded. So we started in mid-2016 after about a year and a half of planning. The 7 full-time employees. We basically make lager. I mean, we do some ales as well, but Keller Pils is about 50% of our sales. And I was looking at the cellar on Friday. We got 7 tanks, and 5 tanks are full of Keller Pils. Couple of tanks are full of some other things. We're a living wage employer, and I think a lot of brewers do pay above the living wage. This is the real living wage, by the way, like that one there, like not the government's pretend one. But being a living wage employer is just more about a decision as a company, thinking that we should be pay people fairly for their efforts, and being part of the 3,000 or so companies that are enrolled in that in the UK is more just like a philosophical stance where we think that that's what we believe in, actually. So, I had previous experience in USA, Australia, Belgium, UK, Germany. I had some qualifications in education as well. I kind of feel like I'm the most unlikely brewery owner around. Like, I think Stu once very kindly described me as a gentleman socialist. So, anyway, thank you, Stu. So what we're going to do is just look at a little bit of industry statistics. This will be EU as well as some stuff from US and in Australia, and then like what we did at Lost and Grounded when we thought about building a brewery. And I do agree with Mr. Keeling that you do need to have philosophy. And I think it's in my earlier career I was very fortunate to work in a company that had a very clear philosophy, and we made Hoppy Pale Ale, and the situation was that was what we were about. And even when we're putting the new brewery in at Little Creatures back in 2008, me and who's now the head brewer, they were very stressed about, is the beer going to change? And actually one of the founders, and he was our managing director, he said, I want the beer to bloody change. I don't want to taste the same. You know, so I'm not spending $20 million to make the beer taste the bloody same.
So from then on, it was actually set the tone for us and the other rest of the brewing team. Was actually, in fact, our job was to make things better, no matter what, you know. And that flowed through in that business to, you know, how we made pizzas or how the bar ran, how everything was actually about being the best what we could do, and it all emulated from basically echoed out from making great pale ale. So if we look at UK real quick. You get these statistics from the Brewers of Europe, so it's freely available online. You can have a wee little look. We're number two producer in the EU, 44 million hectolitres. You think, well, that's a lot of beer. But we're in a declining beer market, so consumption's decreased by 4.6% from 2010 to 2015, which is 2.1 million hectolitres. So you think about that, you think actually that's a metric, let's say a shit ton of beer. Probably more than a lot of the small brewers put together are making in the UK, you know. And there's been an increased number of breweries. So, you know, and these statistics are always out of date, you know, so this is only data from 2015. At that time, we'd grown about 1,000 breweries, but now there's over 2,000. So there's declining beer market, which we all know, but then we all know as well it's not that straightforward because it's changing patterns of how people are consuming beer and changes in, in people wanting, I guess, less but better. So we know it's not that straightforward, but it does sort of paint the picture. If we look at the rest of the EU, we think we got a lot of breweries here. I mean, these little guys here, they got a lot of breweries. So, you know, Switzerland's grown 90% over that same time. So 623 breweries in a small country like Switzerland seems like a lot of breweries to me. Sweden as well, a lot of breweries. And, you know, but interestingly, Germany, very, very, hardly any change at all, 4% over that same amount of time. Now, you could argue that actually the barrier to entry to starting a brewery in the UK might be a little bit less than Germany. In Germany, they expect people to be, have education and experience, and they like things to be very precise, so there's a lot more investment that's required. Not only that, probably a much higher proportion of bottled beers, so the upfront investment is a lot larger than it would be in a market where we have a lot of pubs still, a lot of cask beer, and the rest of it. But, you know, and this is nothing new, but we can see, like over this 5 years, we've got actually an extra 3,206 breweries over that time. And there might be a few more that's not picked up by the statistics, but this is the published data. So we have a look at what happened in the US. And this depressing point here, that's prohibition. So that's where there's no breweries for a while. So breweries like Coors in the US, they got through that period by making malted milk, actually. They had maltings plant at the breweries. So they used to make malted milk and do other things, but eventually it came back. I mean, somewhere around here, Sierra Nevada probably started. Somewhere around here, I actually got interested in brewing and worked in a small brewery during my degree. And there was a big growth spurt. But actually, in fact, everyone forgets about this. So everyone just thinks about this, where we are now with 5,000 breweries, but everyone forgets about this. There was a contraction there for about 7 or 8 years, where actually not many breweries opened, or actually maybe breweries opened, but a lot of breweries shut at the same time. So it's not all like chocolates and roses, you know, it is tough. And the distribution model is different there than it is here, so depending on where you live, you may or may not be able to sell beer direct to customers. You might have to go through another party. So it's very much different. And this is quite interesting as well from the Brewer Association. So this chart here is actually showing the rise and decline of beer categories over the years. So this one here is old regionals and value brands. So this would be anyone that went to the university in the U.S. would know all about like Keystone and all these like really quite cheap beers, and they sort of declined a little bit, but they helped many of us through university. Then the rise of premium brands, they'd be sort of like your imports, and they're slowly declining. And then we got the rise of craft. So when time reached infinity here, you know, where there's no chart on the wall, I don't know what will happen, but I'm sure something else will come after this little heyday that we're all having. And the quote from Bart Watson in this little article was that brewers who proactively recognize that challenge, which is the market's always changing, focus on what they control for, what they can control, quality, consistency, for instance, we're better positioned to ride the wave rather than watch it crash over them. Now, I think that's important, and that all of us operating on a small scale, and even, I classify Fuller's in this as well. So Fuller's isn't a very big brewery; it's big compared to a lot of us, but actually, in fact, we're all tiny compared to large, larger international brewers. So for us to operate on a small scale, people have to have a reason to buy our beer, and that is going to be more consistency. You'd argue that actually, in fact, our consistency is probably less than a bigger brewer that has many more resources to devote to that. However, what we have the benefit of, I think, is character, which is what John brought up as well. And that there's a certain beauty in something that's not quite perfect all the time, you know, and there's a sort of beauty in actually having a beer speak to you out of the glass a little bit. And so we get into economics a little bit, and I think economics is a bit philosophical. So, and actually somebody said to me, actually my partner said to me, what are you going to do when people ask you questions? And I thought, well, no one's going to ask me questions. The whole room's going to be asleep by the time I finish this one. So, you know. So if anyone's getting tired, just like shout out and I'll try to speed up. But yeah, so this is a fundamental principle in economics. And why is it important for all of us? Any that have studied economics before would have seen this. So you got the demand curve, supply curve. At every point along that curve, there would be an equilibrium price. So all things being equal, there's a Latin phrase for that, but actually what it means is all things being equal, which means nothing else changes. Scarcity will increase price, oversupply will decrease price, increased demand attracts more players, and finally a reduction in demand will decrease price, but we'll pretend that's never going to happen at the moment. So why is this important? Well, we'll go back to you. Why is this important? Because I think at times, recent years, we have had scarcity, which is driven the price up a little bit. We all have to be aware of that. But actually, there's a lot of players in the market now, so all things being equal, all the prices will be forced down. So this is an issue for us. However, what can you control to actually not have that happen? It's actually only about consistency and quality and some added, intangible benefits that the customer kind of sees out of that. Because there's no way that on a small scale we can compete with economies of a large scale. So I think first and foremost, when you're starting a brewery, you need to be very focused on actually, in fact, what is going to make us different and what is going to make us special. Because end of the day, I think the world has enough cover bands. We need to do some originals, you know. So we need to be prepared to actually branch out and do things that others may not do. And I sort of have this feeling continually about why would you start a brewery? And I think it's a certain blend of probably ambition and stupidity, I think, and maybe a tiny bit of courage sort of blended in there and amongst all that. But yeah, there's a lot of players, but I do think there's room for more players, but I think there has to be good beer, and it has to be considered beer and thoughtful beer, and that can be done anyway. I think if in our brewery, if we want to make Keller Pils, we want to make pale lager, actually we want to make the best bloody pale lager we can actually make. If you're making IPA, it's the same. You need to strive and actually for perfection. So I was sort of thinking about this as well and about where we all sit. And this is just like there are consumers, you have the early adopters and the imitators. Also in competitor entry timing is the same. So we have pioneers, and I don't want to hurt anyone's feeling. We all feel like we're pioneers in this room, but actually, in fact, probably not many of us fall into that category. We're probably down here somewhere. Early imitators, differentiated by marketing. Early differentiators, improve on a product, offer distinct benefits and features. A lot of us are in this bracket here because actually, in fact, going back 5-10 years ago when the access to, more modern beer was not as it is in the UK, actually, the differentiation was that we could suddenly get beer of a certain style actually on our doorstep rather than having to have it imported. So, well, differentiators. Early nichers is, you know, as you hit saturation, where saturation is. I think when Mike mentioned earlier about 1,000 breweries or whatever when you left the US, another 5,000, I don't know where saturation is. It must be pretty bloody close there, but I'm not sure where it is, but we all started to look for niches, and then late entrants. The late entrance is interesting because you must have a clear advantage in efficiency, distribution, or promotional weights, can capitalize on existing networks. So what does this say to me? This says to me, well, if maybe a larger brewer is starting to enter into, and I don't really like the term craft either, but let's say craft market, what's the advantage they have? They might not have the image, or maybe that we have as other smaller independent brewers. but there's clear advantage that they have in terms of promotional weight and efficiency and accessing the markets and economies of scale that we can never achieve. So, in fact, if you think about that, and if you're a small brewer, if we go back to sort of this here, we know demand is increasing. It's going up this curve, but then supply is increasing as well. So equilibrium price, you could say, is staying the same. But actually, in fact, if supply suddenly increases and the demand doesn't increase materially, then actually the price will decrease. So that's a fact. There's people that have done PhDs on this. It's science. And you can talk about price elasticity, about the change of price of 1%, and what does that mean in terms of the change in the demand of a product. But that is fact. So the only defense you actually have against that is actually quality and quality and consistency, basically. So we going back to I just mentioned about price, and all of us here, we know this is a pretty common path to actually selling beer. So we start a brewery, we get all the free listings, so it's like the low-hanging fruit almost, and you're trying to get in there and just get beer sold. That's free of tar lines, but there's a lot of us all fighting for those. Next step is we gain a listing for long-term, but we need to provide some kind of discount because there's a buyer's market, so unless you're offset by better marketing, there's probably always a little bit of a discussion about that, especially if you're making pale lager, for instance. It's a continual bloody discussion we have. And then you need more growth, so you got to pay for installations and provide additional discount because the buyer knows that it's pay to play. And then if you want to secure high profile, high volume accounts, then pay for the listing, provide a discount, provide another retro, et cetera, et cetera. So we all, to some degree, get dragged down this chain. How quickly it happens is, I guess, dependent on everyone's individual breweries, but that will eventually all happen to us all. This isn't meant to depress anyone, by the way. It's just meant to be, it's like a statement of fact, okay? So what's happening in the USA? What's interesting in this chart here, actually, this chart is the average case price versus growth rate of a number of brands, and these are all pooled into groups. And actually, the highest growth rate is actually at the higher end of the case price. So what does this tell you? It says, oh shit, I can go charge a heap of money for my beer. I should sell a lot. No, it doesn't tell you that. What it tells you is that you can charge a lot of money for a beer and grow at a good rate if you have quality and consistency. So it's not as simple as just charging money for beer and not having the rest to back it up. And quality can be all sorts of things. Quality is not just how something tastes. It's not the aroma. It's actually how it looks. It's actually the fact your invoicing is correct to the customer. It's actually the fact that you're easy to deal with for people to place orders. It's almost like there's many things in the chain actually before it even gets to the consumer in a pint glass. Actually, that's quality. But not many people. I'd say a lot of people realize this, but there's a lot of people that don't realize this as well. So brand and perceived quality are factors in pricing. So down here at the more competitive pricing, it's a bit of a battlefield. Up here, there's some clear leaders that have been doing a good job, and they're growing quite well. Now, this is the most depressing bit about the whole thing. So anyone that studied economics, rent-seeking behavior. So that's when you want someone to pay your rent for you, basically. So rent-seeking behavior is the use of the resources of a company, an organization, or an individual to obtain economic gain from others without reciprocating any benefits to society through wealth creation. An example of rent-seeking is when a company lobbies the government for loan subsidies, grants, or tariff protection. So when you think about that, and I don't think that small brewers' duty relief is rent-seeking necessarily because we're actually creating a lot of employment. So that is... It could be classified as rent-seeking, but actually there are a lot of benefits that are flowing out of that. Because on a per-liter basis, we all make a lot more, create a lot more jobs than you do on a larger scale. But it's all for us to think, what would happen if that duty relief went away? Duty become 40% of revenue sort of overnight. So I don't think that'll ever happen, but you never know. In Australia, interestingly, there's no duty relief for small brewers, and actually the number one constraint to growth identified by the Independent Brewing Association was actually excise rates. So that's how they see it in Australia. What's red light mean? Does red light mean I'm over? Okay, were you quick? Okay, and then, so looking at all this at Lost and Grounded, what we thought about when we did the brewery was organizational culture, marketing, sales, quality product offer, and production. We want to be a living wage employer, we want future employee shareholders, and we want a team that can see the big picture. Craft is not about... craft is just about actually assembling a team of people that care about something from start to finish, and that could be making beer or running a kitchen or making belts or making bloody shoes. I don't care what it is, but that's what craft is. Marketing, you know, we went with illustration, and we wanted it, you know, our feel is actually to feel a bit friendly and curious. And we went freelance just so we weren't led down any path. There's a bit of naivety in it. Sales, you know, considering direct versus wholesale, population base, constraints, et cetera, et cetera. Quality and product offer, what do we want to make, brewer-led versus marketing-led. For us, it's about making that, and actually everything else kind of flows from that. So, but having attention to detail. And then production, so here's a nice little shot of our pipe bridge. I'm an engineer, so I love pipe bridges, I love parallel lines, you know, something beautiful in it. But yeah, so how efficient do you want to be, and how scalable is it? Because if you go back to the slides at the beginning, there's going to be pressure at some point in time, unless we, so if you have more efficiency in production, a small change in efficiency actually has a multiplier effect on the bottom line. So actually, in fact, knowing your inputs and how efficient you are can help you, I guess, be as efficient as possible on a small scale. And yeah, so a few brief conclusions there, but I think the one is, like, how will we all continue to be different like everyone else? Because it's actually quite a challenge, and it's something that I haven't encountered in my brewing career before. In a brewery, I worked at one brewery, we made 50% pale ale. I worked at another brewery, made 50% pale lager. And now I work at another brewery that makes 50% pale lager. So how do I actually keep on challenging ourselves and doing different things? So I hope no one is totally depressed. It's, you know, the future is bright still. The future is bright, everyone. But yeah, thanks a lot for having me and listening. So.
Thank you, Alex.
The Brewers Lectures!
This lecture is supported by Munton's Malt, a division of Munton's PLC selling over 210,000 tonnes of malt annually to the world's brewing, distilling and food industries. Go to muntonsmalt.com.